Welcome to Off the Bench with Danny Cannell.
Back to throw, first and 10. He is tight end.
And Rajah Bell.
Bell has done tackling it. 22 to Rajah.
Saw the future of football right before your eyes. Just yell it out, man. He can't guard me.
What is going on? Welcome to Off the Bench. This is Danny Cannell with Rajah Bell, episode 14. We're already 14 episodes in, man.
Yes, indeed.
Feels good. We got a big show for you. We got Willie Taggart scheduled to come on. I'm a little nervous about this. I don't know if we get him or not. Well, I'm pumped up for that. But I'm a little nervous because it's signing day. It's the first time ever we've had early signing day, but he's going to take some time out to chat with us for a few
minutes. That's kind of big.
Yeah.
I think that's you pulling your weight a little bit.
Bro. I hope so. We'll find
it.
Well, we haven't got it yet, so we'll see if he, does show up. We're also going to get into the greatest Laker of all time. We're going to give you our top five list for Wednesday. This time, it's top five pump-up music artists. That was Debo's description
pump
of that.
Pump-up music
artists. I would just
artists.
Call it a pregame playlist, but we'll go with Debo's words. We'll go with that. The Cavs lost to the Bucks. We'll get into that a little bit. And I think there's a little bit of drama brewing in New England. So we're going to get to all of that up in a minute. But first, it is bowl season, Rajah.
Yeah.
The bowls are in full force. 41 bowl games. Last night was right in our backyard.
Yes.
FAU was playing at the Boca Bowl.
Singletary. Touchdown, Owls. Shifty moves by the sophomore running back, Devin Singletary.
Oh, this ain't about me. I feel great for our players, for our fans. You know, they haven't won in a long time, 10 years since he's been to a bowl game. So to win 11 games and really, you know, 10-game winning streak, there's got to be, you know, this has got to be the hottest team in the country. They don't even play close games. We've only had one game within 14 points the last 10 weeks.
All right, so that was the Cherubundi Tart Cherry Juice. What? Boca Raton Bowl. That was the official name. That's the Cherubundi Tart Cherry Juice is the official sponsor of that bowl.
Scrap that.
That was it was a blowout. It wasn't even close. It wasn't entertaining. I think there are too many bowls. The fans were chanting 10 more years because they actually gave Lane Kiffin an extension,
deal, right.
A 10-year contract, which if he makes it 10 years, like we said, we get 10,000 followers. We're going to do a cipher.
Right.
We're going to do a contest, a little rap battle. If he gets 10 years, I'll... You can have one of my kids. Like, it is not going to happen. There's
no chance
10 years. But I do like it's a show of that.
So what's the buyout then on that? Like, why would you lock in for 10 years?
See, here's the thing. There probably is some – and this is actually the genius of Lane Kiffin because I'm sure he probably has something to do with this or his agent. I think this is a perception thing. Hey, people will – Lane has said it from day one. He wants the buzz because you're at FAU. You don't get a lot of buzz. So he wants to do things to create buzz. You get a 10-year extension – everybody's going to be talking about it
today. It was buzz.
Including us.
Yep.
So the game was awful. I think they should cut the bowl games in half.
When I was
playing 20 years ago, they had 20 bowl games. It was perfect.
Yeah, but you got to play. You were at a yes. Blue Blood program,
you know,
so you got to play in one
every why?
Year.
You know why I got to play in them? Because we won and we were good. If you're 6-6,
okay.
Which is what Toledo was. They were awful this season. Or they were 7-6, right?
Akron.
No, who was it last night?
Yeah.
Akron. All right, it was the Akron Zips. I can't even keep track of who's playing in
Toledo's
these
in one,
bowls.
Too, aren't they?
Yes, they are, too. They played the other night. I can't keep track of which MAC team is out there playing. But there are a slew of teams that are 6-6.
Right.
This year, thank goodness, we don't have any teams that are 5-7 because we had teams last year 5-7 playing in a bowl. Like, you should have to earn it. This, to me, is the equivalent of giving everybody a trophy. And I can't stand that mindset. Like, oh, good season, young Johnny. Way to go. You tried your hardest. Here you go. Here's your trophy.
I don't love that
either. This is the trophy.
I don't love that either, but I'm going to disagree because, like, yeah, okay, Toledo. You got me saying Toledo.
See?
Akron. Damn MAC teams. Akron 6-6, but FAU, that's 11 wins. Like, if you don't have a Cherubundi Tart Cherry Juice Boca Bowl, they don't get to play, and they deserve it. I don't know, man. Like, I played at small schools for my entire career. I played at Boston University and Florida International. And you know, we were a snub for the NCAA tournament my junior year. We lost maybe 4 games all season, and we didn't win our conference tournament. And we had beaten some blue blood programs, but we just weren't going to get the at-large bid.
Yeah.
And we were such a small school that at the time, they didn't even consider us for the NIT. So I'm always partial to a small school getting an opportunity to play another game, especially like the seniors, guys who, you know, they've had great seasons. But they're not Power Five conferences, so I'm cool with them having multiple bowls out there. I just wish, like, the names of, like, can I buy a bowl?
Yeah, you can.
I
do
could.
It. Yeah.
Like, I could have the Bell Family Trust Bowl, maybe?
Totally. Absolutely.
What do you think
get
one of those runs? Like, what's a bowl naming run?
I don't think it's too crazy for you running around with all that NBA money. You could probably drop a couple mil.
No, heck no.
I bet it's between, I have no idea. This is totally off the top. I bet it's between 3 and 5 million for a lower tier bowl.
For a lower tier
like,
bowl.
Like, what, like the chart, I keep saying chart.
Cherrabundi.
Tart cherry juice.
The Bell Family Trust would not have a bowl game.
Oh, I look it up. Debo, look it up. I'm telling you, I've talked about these bowls ad nauseum, except for knowing which teams are playing.
Florida Atlantic, though.
Yeah.
Like, has anyone rehabbed an image in as quick a time span as Lane Kiffin? I mean, Lane Kiffin was a spoiled brat a couple years ago. Like, Lane was on fire last night. He was all over the pregame and
running, you know, up the score. I mean, it was 34-3, and they're going for two. And he was saying, hey, they talk smack. I'm going to go ahead and
go for two.
Why not? Yeah.
And I really like what he's done, because I've told you guys this off air, but I flirted with the idea of wanting to coach at my alma mater, FIU. And everyone around town asks me, like, what would you do? What's the recipe? And I'm like, well, I believe the recipe to be, like, right here in your backyard. Like, there are plenty of guys that are too good to necessarily want to go to FIU off the bat, or FAU in this instance football-wise. But those second-tier athletes in the state of Florida, some of those kids that get overlooked by the national powers, some of the kids that like grade-wise might have to go to JUCO and then come back, they're fully capable athletically of being like on the playing field with some of those bigger schools. And you saw it across the board with guys like Motor Singletary. I mean, Driscoll looked good. Some of those wide receivers look fast and like little just uncatchable dudes. So I think he's taken that recipe that I think would work at some of these smaller Florida schools, and he's implementing it at FAU, and I dig it.
All right, Debo has straightened me out, but I'm still contending that I am correct on this one. The official name is the Cherrabundi Tart Cherry Boca Raton Bowl.
I like the juice better.
But that's what it is. Because I was like, what the heck is Cherrabundi Tart Cherry? It is a juice.
It's a juice
for cleanses and stuff. My wife's all into the health aspects. That's what it's for.
Yeah.
I would say to you, and this might sound really cutthroat,
yeah,
if you want to play in the tournament, win your conference. Then it's something, because I think it should be. See, here's my problem with it.
Yeah.
I think it should be really hard to play in the big dance. I think it should be really hard to play in a bowl game. And it's not hard to play in a bowl game. Imagine what it would have meant to you if you would have made the dance and you would have been playing. You'd be like, we accomplished something, as opposed to, all right, guys, you didn't win.
So you're saying that if I don't get to play in a bowl game, all right, I'm going to feel better than if I, like, achieved playing in a bowl game? Like, that doesn't make sense. Like, kids that get to play in a bowl game are just going to be happy they played it. They don't care that it was the Cherrabundi Tart Juice.
Okay, for some kids they do. But I think we have so many bowls, they've been diluted so much. You've got players who are saying, I'm not going to play because they're getting ready for the draft.
Yeah.
Royce Freeman did it for Oregon. We've got Derwin James for Florida State. Now, these are top tier, and these are skipping good bowl games. This
right.
isn't the Boca Raton Bowl. These are bigger bowls, the Las Vegas Bowl. Actually, it was played before that one. I don't know what the scope of how good their gift package was. But I feel like it's becoming less and less of a big deal to play in a bowl. And players just want to go for the trip. They don't necessarily want to play in the game.
I measure bowl games by swag, like what they're going to get in the gift
package.
Totally,
absolutely.
Right? And a list came out like the other day of what some of these bowls were giving away in their swag bags, and I would be pissed.
Like, if you didn't get to go?
No, if I went.
Oh,
and
yeah.
And you were given,
see?
Like, one of them was like a blanket.
Yeah, a hoodie.
And like, I'm like, what are you talking
right.
about?
The best. So we used to have the bowl gifts, and every time, and I was a little bit bothered by this, because you could either get like, and at the time, I don't even remember what the game was, like probably PlayStation 1 or Nintendo was probably
right,
at the
right,
time,
right.
like the first
yeah.
Nintendo. You could get a little swag bag, or you could get a ring for playing in the bowl. You could chip in like your $500 and you could get a ring.
Right.
Every time our seniors always chose the ring. And I was like, by the time I left, I had like 9 rings.
Oh, they made the call for the whole team.
Yes. You'd have the seniors would vote on the gifts. And I don't know if it was the coaches. There was some influence there that was getting in on it. So we have the bowl season going on. But it is also, for the first time ever, we're having a new early signing period in college football. Some coaches aren't too thrilled with it. In particular, one, Nick Saban.
I don't see how it benefits anybody. It's really stressful for everyone. We're all trying to get ready for bowl games and playoff games, and we got a signing date right in the middle when we're going to be practicing for a playoff game.
All right, Nick Saban doesn't like it. You know what I say? Stop crying. You make $11 million. You have to work a little bit harder. $11 million a year, you can make a couple extra phone calls while you're, quote, prepping for the bowl game, which, by the way, is another 10 days away.
Bro, I could not have said it better. I think it sounds like Knicks a little salty because they're seventh projected right now instead of like number one where they usually are. But yeah, I read some articles about guys, you know, detailing their last week and having to get ready for a bowl game, and then he's in Boca in a visit, and then he's back home to cook. Yeah, it's why you make $10 million a year. It's your job. If you don't want to do it, pick another damn profession. Like, I have no. Why do I care? Why, real talk? Why do I care?
I'm with you. It's the first time they've done it. I signed in February when I did it. There was always the big national signing day. It was on televised on ESPNU from wall to wall coverage. Yeah. These nerds get in there. I'm sorry, I never paid attention to recruiting. Even as a supposed expert, I don't even pay attention to the recruits now because I don't care if a guy's 4- and 5-star. What does he do when he gets on the field? Like, that's what I want to find out when a guy's a freshman. Do you know that Bama's made up 80% of their roster is either a 4- or 5-star player? That's insane. So don't cry to me about getting players. You're going to get your players.
I know. And how hard is it to win if you always – like, this was always the knock on Phil Jackson. And it wasn't really a knock because Phil's still regarded as one of the best coaches, you know, ever. But, you know, those who would knock Phil would say, yeah, but he had Shaq and Kobe. He had Mike and Scotty. Like, he always had loaded rosters. Like, it's not hard to win when you have the best players all the time, is it? Right. Like, you should be in the conversation for a national championship when your whole roster is the best possible kids playing high school football coming to college.
Right, because I believe it is – it's a lot about the X's and the O's, but it's more about the Larrys and the Joes. About the players on the field. Now, what you get a dynasty, what Nick Saban has, is when you get the best players and you combine that with the greatest coaching, which I think is what Phil Jackson did too.
Right.
He's an exceptional coach. And I think the NBA is more about managing egos. Don't you think?
It's not as much
about X's and O's, and I think Phil was able to do that, able to manipulate the right buttons, motivate in the best way possible.
You're dealing with kids. In the NBA, you're dealing with like professional grown men. Another question, though. I don't know what the rule is, but I want to make a Rajah's rule for this one. But we talked about it a few weeks ago. These early signing periods and these assistants, because from all I read, like that's going to be the biggest difference in this is the way that these assistant coaches, like that domino effect that starts to happen and all these guys shuffling. Mm-hmm. Getting kids and selling kids, you're essentially a used car salesman. Like, you're selling this kid. I'm looking you in the face, telling you, yeah, dude, we're going to be here for 4 years. FIU is the place for you. Come. And right after you sign, I take a job somewhere else. A kid should have some flexibility. He should just have some flexibility if that happens to him. I just firmly believe that. I don't know what the answer is, but you're dealing with – these are young men's lives. Like, and you're making millions of dollars, so I get it's your livelihood, but a young man picking the right situation for him and having the right people in his corner or the ones that he perceived to be the right people in his corner could be the difference between him being a very, very successful what have you and flaming out and leaving college. Like, you're very literally have these guys' like lives in the balance there.
I think it's one of the most important decisions you'll make in your life. I think I totally agree with you because the players have so little leverage, and I'm not one. I don't believe we should go out and fully pay the players, make them professional. I'm not in that camp, but I am in the camp where we've got to make things fairer for players. And one of those things I'm totally on board with you. You've got to let them. If their coach leaves, they should be allowed to transfer. There should be a window. Give them a couple months. Let them decide if he wants to leave. If your coach leaves, it gets a little bit hairy. Is it just the head coach?
Right.
Is it the coordinator? Is it your position coach? But I think the NCAA should absolutely – they won't look into it because they don't care. But I think they should look into it and do it. Let's get to Willie Taggart, our guy at Florida State. He can help us answer some of these questions. Currently, they have the 50th class right now, but they only have 9 commits. They're expecting to see that change, which should make up most of their class. All right, let's get to it.
All right, it's my privilege to welcome to the podcast brand new head coach, Florida State University, Willie Taggart. Willie, what's going on?
Work, and more work. You know, it don't stop right now. You know, you got this early signing period, and you're trying to recruit coaches, you're trying to recruit players, trying to recruit our current players. It's all recruiting right now, but it's been fun.
I appreciate you coming on because I know today is the first day of the new early signing period. I know it's probably crazier picking up the phone, trying to close deals, get them all done. I had a quick question for you, though, because all of a sudden about the day your press conference, when you were announced as the head coach and it was your opening press conference, my Twitter starts blowing up and people are saying, man, Coach Taggart, he's calling you out. He's taking shots. And I'm like, wait a second. And then other people are saying he's a shout out. So I heard it. And I was laughing. I'm like, man, I'm thrilled I got the shout out in the press conference. But when he went there and said, you watched, you gave his whole list, and greats. Like, these are all-time seminal greats when you're talking about Deion Sanders, Charlie Ward, mm-hmm. and then he even threw in an even Danny Cannell. So now, what was the kind of the message of that? Was that like, hey, I even, when they had Danny, like, they might not have been as great as they were? Is that what that meant? Or was that, you've been that dedicated through the years that you just know that much history?
Well, it's just more the history. It's guys that I appreciated watching them play and being a Seminole fan all my life. Is throwing out guys that stood out to me and guys that kind of came to my head off top, to be honest with you. You know, and there's a lot of great, there's a lot of guys that I missed out on too. But there was more of guys that I appreciated watching play and knowing you, Danny, and being around you a little bit, that helped too. So
nice. I love it. I think Chris Wenke might be upset, though. He might get a little mad at you. I don't know if he got
afterwards,
the shout out.
I thought about a lot of guys that probably would have been upset, but there's a lot of great ones out there that being a part of. Even Casey Weldon.
That's right. There we go. Now we're going to go through the list of all the old quarterbacks. I love
it. Yes, sir.
I love it. When you talked about getting the job at Florida State, you talked about the meaning of family and what it meant to you growing up and how it was your dream job that you, when you were younger, do you remember the first Seminole game you actually went to or really were a part of?
Well, I tell you what, for me personally, I never had an opportunity to go to a game. It was tough in my family to be able to come up, and again, growing up, I never had a chance to go to any college football game, but just watching them. And again, in our household, everybody loved the Noles, and you would have thought someone in our family had graduated or went to school here, and no one did, you know. But actually, the first time I really got a chance to experience a game came here in Dole Campbell Stadium was when I was at South Florida, and we came up and played. And it was one heck of an experience being here, and you hear the song come on, and you just get goosebumps. And it was a little weird because I was on the other side, and I was like, geez, I remember growing up to this. This is what you wanted. You know, so I heard the song. I thought they were doing it for me, you know, and I was on the other team.
No doubt. They had no idea that it probably was for you back in the day, which is awesome. You talked about chasing a dream. Now that it's kind of – you've had a chance to set in, and I don't know how much it's had to set in because I'm sure you've been slammed, you know, hiring a staff, getting after recruits. But have you had a minute to sit back and just kind of soak it in? And what's that feeling been like for you to kind of chase this dream and finally capture it?
Well, I have to be honest with you, I really haven't. And someone asked me that the other day, and I told him it hadn't really hit me yet. You know, I think over the holiday at some point when I get a little time to kind of sit back and take a deep breath, it would probably hit me. You know, like you said, I've just been on the go. Someone asked me the other day how you like Tallahassee. It's like, I can't tell you because I've been in the airplane, you know, or driving around. But it is fun being the head football coach, knowing you can go to the front of the line now when it comes to recruiting. And you don't have to be the parade waving anymore and waiting for the other guys. So that part's been fun. And, again, I know it's going to hit me at some point. And that, hey, you the head football coach at Florida State University. How about that? You know, and damn, I just said that and got goosebumps. But it's pretty cool. Like you said, man, it's something that I always wanted and dreamed of. And for everybody out there, man, dreams do come true if you just keep working towards them.
So I know you're crazy. It's the early signing period. It's the first time we've had it. Now, I'm just going to give you full disclosure because me, I'm just a loudmouth in the media right now. Like, I get paid to just say stuff, and I can't throw an interception. I can't lose a game. So I saw Nick Saban come out the other day, and he was railing on the early signing period. And my thoughts were, A, he gets paid $11 million. The coaches, you guys get paid a lot of money. Like, it's part of your job now. It's part of the job description. Like, that's part of the work detail. Like, it just goes into it. Why do head coaches not like this early signing period?
Well, I know for me personally, I just don't think it's necessarily fair to the young people that have to make these lifetime decisions. You know, it's more of a rush job, and it's more of a job to satisfy the coaches and the program right now rather than necessarily doing what's best for the kids. You know, you think about all the coaching changes that goes on around this time, it's not really fair to them to have someone recruiting them and then all of a sudden leave right after they sign. You know, the time in February to me was ideal because of all the coaching changes and stuff are pretty much done by that time. And and the kids can really make the best decision for themselves. You know, so again, I never had a problem with February. And then, you know, with changes, people always get uncomfortable with change, you know, and it's something different now. But you just look at what's going on now. And some of these kids are probably wait because of all the uncertainty right now. So, and then I look at, like, for myself, in this process of coming and having such a short time to try to build a relationship with a kid and get them to come here, it's tough to do.
So how much of this does come down to the wire? Because I'm not a fan of signing day. Like, I like to watch kids when they play. Like, I can't stand guys that come in. I played with a lot of them who were 4- and 5-star guys, and they ended up being backups and never played. You know, never was. Because I don't like to get all caught up into it. But how does it work for you? Like, how much of it do you think is closing today? Or are the decisions already made?
Well, I think on some guys in program where they're established and there's not a lot of turnover at the time, and they have guys committed, I think you'll see those guys stay committed, you know. But the ones that have the turnover and there's been some changes, you'll see guys want to wait to try to see who's going to be their coach, you know, and how things going from there. But I think I personally think going forward, you probably start seeing guys wait around in February to make sure, unless they're early signee or early enrollees, you know.
The other thing they want is that press conference. Like, they want that national exposure, which drives me nuts because they like this. You know, they haven't played one down of college football, and they want to get out there and joke with everybody. And, you know, and I'm sure you guys are sitting there watching on TV as a kid has three hats, and he pulls up one. He's like, yeah, I'm going to Tallahassee. And then he's like, nope, I'm going to Gainesville. Like, that drives me insane. I can only imagine what it's like for you guys, and yet you have to play it cool. You can't rip a kid, you know, like, you can't do that. But what is it like when a Justin Fields says he's going to Georgia and you guys lose out on somebody? Like, what is the reaction?
Well, again, I think each and every person is different. You know, I've never been a person, a type of coach that get upset with a kid for changing his mind. Again, this is his life and a big time decision for him. To me, I just focus on our program, try to do a great job of building those relationships and just hope that it's somewhere that he want to be. And I think with all of this, you kind of know if a kid is coming to you or not, if you built a relationship like you're supposed to. I think if you hadn't built those relationships and you thinking that you're probably going to get those guys and they switch out on you, that's on the coach. You know, I don't get upset with these kids, whether they change their mind or not. It's their decision. I just try to do a great job of building those relationships and try to get them in our program. And I'm okay with they don't want to be here. It's kind of, as coaches, you kind of move on, you know. But you can understand, too, with the young people. I mean, this is an exciting time for them. And most of these kids, it's the only time they're going to be wanted like this before, you know. And they want the spotlight. And, I mean, it is what it is for some of them. Some of them are different, you know. But you got to be happy for them. It's life-changing for them. And you just, again, I think, now, you don't like all the I'm going to come here, I'm going to go there, or then switch out. But I think all coaches know ahead of time whether or not that kid's coming.
So what was your conversation like with Coach Bowden when you called him up?
Well, I wanted to introduce myself and tell him how much I admire him and what he's done at Florida State, and always been a fan from a young guy coming on up. And the only time I was disappointed is when he didn't recruit me here to come be a part of here. I think he probably had about two more national championships if he did. But
that's right. He might have. Really,
no, but really, just letting him know how much I appreciated him. And I can remember him talking. I was hearing him speak one time and how he talked about faith, family, and football. And that's something that everywhere I've been is something that I applied to our football program. And told him that I won't let him down and appreciate him, and that he's always welcome to come by here. He don't have to call. He show up whenever he wants to, and I would love some feedback from him because he is the best. He's the GOAT, and I'm happy now that I'm here in town and I can pick up a phone or drive over and see him and pick his brain.
Amen to that. I'm a huge fan of Coach Bowden. Obviously, haven't played for him, and I think his – his insight and knowledge could be invaluable to you. And I think he'll do a pretty good job of not stepping on your toes either. Like, I think he'll be he'll be there if you need him, and yet he won't be meddling. Like, you know, that mother-in-law that kind of gets involved in your marriage. You know what I mean? Like, I think he knows a pretty good way to play it. I better not get in trouble with my wife for saying that. But I think, you know, I think he'll have a pretty good way. How about your new staff? Like, how is the formation of your new staff? Because I was as thrilled as I was to see you hired. I'm like, all right, let's see who he's bringing with him. Let's see who he's going to bring to Tallahassee. How is that going?
It's going well. You know, I'm not a fan of trying to get named guys to satisfy anybody else. What's best for me is getting the right fit for what we're trying to build here, and getting really good mentors to help mentor our players, you know, and to me that's part of coaching. But it all goes back to the right fit. You know, there's a lot of coaches out there that know X's and O's, but they got to be a right fit for what we're trying to build and trying to get an eagerless staff. And if I can get that, I think winning and everything else will take care of itself. We have some really good football players here that need to be mentored and coached up. And I'm looking for the guys that really fit and appreciate what Florida State is all about. So there's a lot of candidates. You know, phone was ringing off the hook, you know, resumes and everything. It's just getting the right fit in here. And I think one of the most important hires is going to be the guy that we bring as a defensive coordinator. So I want to make sure we get the right guys, and especially get our defense being back to playing Florida State defense like we all know, and then being able to score points like we always been able to do.
What's your role going to be like for the bowl practices and the bowl itself? Like, what do you do?
I've just been evaluating. You know, I've been able to go around and evaluate practice and just seeing how we do things, and I'm taking some notes to help me as we go forward on things. I know what we've done in the past, how it's going to help us here, and also looking at some things they're doing that probably we can implement to help us continue to go. So it's been more the evaluation part of it. And again, like I said earlier, not only I'm out trying to recruit players to come here, but got to re-recruit the guys that's here as well.
So I know I'm not dialed in on the recruiting rules, but I want you to know I'm here for you if you need anything. I know, like, Ohio State had this issue with Kirk Herbstreit, and they got in trouble for him taking a picture. I would have been busted because I would have been, sure, you want a picture? I'll do it. I don't know how you guys keep up track with the 400 pages of the rule book.
Well, you just try to do right, you know, and not do anything wrong. And you shouldn't have to cheat to do anything if you're working your butt off. So, but you just follow. When you don't know, you got to act, you know, and compliance will get tired of me because I'm going to always ask. I'm going to blow their phone up because one thing we're not going to do is break any rules. So if you don't know, ask.
All right. Hey, Willie, thanks so much for coming on. Close it out, man. Go get us some 5 stars at Florida State, all right?
No, we need the right player, you know, no matter what star they are. It's all about developing once they get here. But I appreciate you, Danny.
Thanks for having me on. Look forward to seeing you in Tallahassee. All right, thanks to Willie Taggart for jumping on with us. We appreciate that. Of course, Coach Taggart eventually hopes to get Florida State back to the national championship game. This year in Atlanta, it was just announced the other day that the halftime performer, and this was like there was a bunch of rumors going around early in the season when Taylor Swift's song was coming out, like at the tease college football. I thought it was one of the worst correlations ever, like it was a bad fit for college football. There was speculation it might be her, but they came out. It's going to be Kendrick Lamar is going to be the halftime performer.
True.
Pretty incredible. Like, I can't wait to see what it is. And they're trying to make college football like the Super Bowl, and this is another step in getting it to be that feel.
I was going to ask you, when did that start happening? Because I don't remember there being a halftime performance at a national
championship
game.
They've done it, but it's never been as big as it is now. And it really has started with the playoff era. Like, the Orange Bowl has always had a huge halftime festivities.
Yeah.
And it's longer. Like, I played in it 3 years. I think I told you that.
Right.
It was like I was bummed I had to play in it 3 years in a row. But I remember the halftime was always like 25 minutes. It was 30 minutes. It was way longer than normal. And they'd have some performer, but it was never to the scale of this. So it's really a playoff era type thing. Where in year four of this, that's when they've started to do it. But this by far will get the biggest buzz that we've seen. So Wednesday we do our top fives. I think this is a good opportunity. We're going to give you our top five pregame playlist favorites.
Okay.
Or as in Debo's words,
our pump-up music artist.
A puma.
Yeah. Yeah, our pumas. All right. So I'll let you go first there, Raja.
Wait,
this is not today. Like, this isn't if you're going out today. This is during your heyday.
In my heyday.
You're getting ready to go shut down Kobe. What are you listening to on the way to the arena?
That's tough. Like, I admittedly, like, not a big music head growing up. Like, so I don't know. I just want to preface it with that. all right. So my top five probably, in no particular order, I guess. I definitely have Biggie in there. Like, I was an East Coast rap dude. So anywhere in his catalog, you could find me. Jay-Z as well. And then I was born in St. Croix in the Virgin Islands, raised there until I was 12, 13. So I really like reggae. So there are a number of reggae artists. But Damian Marley, like Junior Gang Marley, when he dropped Welcome to Jamrock, like I was into that. Like, it was in rotation every day going to the game. That would be three. Anybody from the Locks. I wasn't a big Sheik Luch fan, but like Jada and Styles P, like especially Jada, like and he goes really hard, not commercial, but like it spoke to me. And then DMX.
Just yeah,
because like like I was into all of that.
Yes, he was angry. He'd
right.
get you fired
yeah,
up.
Yeah, absolutely.
Do anything you want. Who were the Locks? that's just a white dude coming out at me. I usually feel I'm pretty connected on that one. Who are the Locks?
It's like the filet salmon, right? That's
the Locks. Yeah, the Locks on a bagel and a schmear.
I'll have to Google some Locks.
Right. The Locks. Let's see. The Locks were with, like, they started with Biggie, and I want to say, like, in that camp with, like, Lil Kim and all of them, right? Didn't they start up in something like that? And then they kind of.
We'll have to do a little
it's
research.
It's hard to explain. You never heard. Like, okay.
I'm sure I've
a lot
heard
of their
it.
Stuff's got
I'm
a lot
sure
of
I've
F-bombs.
Heard
already.
It.
Yeah.
They were with Bad Boy Records.
They were with Bad Boy to start, right?
Okay,
right,
they were with Bad Boy, of course. That's another good one. The Biggie and P. Diddy.
Yeah.
When they were coming out there, I was bumping that. All right, so my number five, Sundays, driving to the stadium. Be a little bit nervous, right? You know, it's you only play once a week. It's not as many nights as you played in the NBA. I put on a little gospel. Try to calm it down
word.
A little bit. Try to soothe the soul. Make
yeah,
sure I was good
what?
With the big one upstairs
okay.
before I played. All right, then number four, we've had Black Thought the other day. We listened to his side. The Roots,
yeah.
I would have. And actually, my man Jake Plummer, actually, when we came out as the quarterback group, he had it worked out where we came out to the Roots when we came out just the early, like way pregame.
Right.
They play it while we were throwing and warming up, just the quarterbacks. In college, just to mix up genres a little bit, I'd ride with the linebackers, the white linebackers.
Yeah.
So they'd want to get a little bit heavier. So we listened to a compilation of a little Stone Temple Pilots
what?
And a little Alice in Chains. They like they were nuts. Like
what
these
is
guys
that?
Were crazy.
What is the song from?
See,
Stone Temple Pilots?
we're gonna have to like.
This is my blackishness coming out. Right?
We're gonna have to open up each other's minds a little bit to some. You don't know who those guys are, Debo?
No.
Oh my god,
my man Debo is from. He's from all the 215.
I'm gonna have to
what,
open 610
or 215.
Classic
610, baby.
Some of the greatest rock bands of all time. I had Jay-Z on there, a little public service announcement.
True, true.
Allow me to reintroduce myself.
My name is Ho.
Yeah.
Right.
And then number one for me was Snoop, Dr. Dre, The Chronic, that album.
2001?
Like, yeah, like, yeah. Or even before that. That might have been the two, because I was in college when
was
The Chronic
it?
Was out.
Oh, I'm thinking of Still Dre. Like,
yeah.
Yes, my bad. Yes,
but both of them together,
yes.
That was playing all the time throughout our dorm. Like, that album was playing
nonstop. That was a good album.
Yeah.
Did you ever
whole
listen
album.
To your own song?
No,
Danny
I did
was
not.
On an album with DMX.
That is true. And he actually, so true story. When we were recording ours, I did it with Kerry Collins. So he actually flew up to New York. We went to a studio down in like Union Square.
Yeah.
We knocked it out. We had some Captain and Cokes to kind of get things going a little bit, which was not quite as strong as what DMX had.
Right,
he had
right.
something stronger influence. He came to the studio, the same studio we did. It was weird because we actually, our song was a Beastie Boys song and they are on the track.
Right.
But they had laid down the track before, so we never got to record with them, which I was kind of bummed about.
Right, right.
But DMX was recording right after us, so he comes in the studio, has like three pit bulls with him, and like
the dogs.
Yeah, yeah, oh, like
nice,
real dogs
nice.
in Manhattan.
Not
into
his
the studio,
dogs, but like real dogs.
Real dogs,
yes,
yeah.
I got it.
And came in there, and I think that was like part of his thing. Like he always traveled with dogs because he was always barking.
Right.
And everybody was kind of scared of him, like, for
I
real. Like,
yeah,
and
I
was scared of him too. So I didn't really didn't say much. Except what's up on the way out.
That's funny. DMX covered like Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer.
Yes, my kids. I showed it to him.
It was awesome.
Yeah,
it was awesome.
I mean, there needs to be some the Christmas genre, as I'm learning the last couple weeks, as I'm getting sick of it. You need to be able to go diverse and go off to put a little DMX
not
on.
A Christmas music fan?
I love Christmas music, yeah. but I get a little fatigued because we start early. Like, okay. I'm talking November 1st. Like, way. Like, I think you're supposed to do Christmas. This is way early because
right,
the kids
Christmas.
Are ready for it. Yeah, so now we're on to DMX. That's how bad we're getting in the cycle of Christmas music. So the other night was Kobe Day, Kobe Night.
Right.
We talked about that. You had some great stories. Those were awesome. So it brought up the conversation of who's the greatest Laker of all time. Magic, one of the greatest Lakers of all time himself, actually had some thoughts on it.
We're here to celebrate the greatest who's ever wore the purple and gold.
So he went ahead and just said it. Said Kobe is the greatest of all time. Shaq, even though they had their beefs, he came out and said Kobe was the greatest Laker of all time. Do you have any beef with this? Or do you think Kobe, it's a lock, it's done? Give him the two numbers, he's the greatest of all time.
I don't have any beef with it, but I don't know that it's a hands down, like, I mean, it probably is. I have no beef with Kobe getting it. My question is, and forgive me, but do you know how many championships Magic has won?
He won five.
Kobe
won
six.
But he only played, Kobe won five as well.
Five.
Remember how bad he wanted six to get Jordan and couldn't get it?
That's right.
But Kobe played 20 years. Magic only played 13.
Yeah, I mean, so that would be my only, like, that would be the only challenger there. And because I grew up in that golden era of basketball when Magic, you know, Bird and then MJ came along and they basically resurrected the NBA. Magic's always going to like be what I associate with the Laker brand mm-hmm. when you say Lakers to me. But Kobe, because he was there 20 years.
If you go all-time totals, points, rebounds, like all that assists, all that, it's gonna favor Kobe. I don't know if the assists do because he never passed. But Magic, in 13 seasons, had the same amount of titles, five,
right.
had one more finals MVP. And he had three regular season MVPs. I didn't really, Kobe only had one regular
right.
season MVP.
He got screwed a few times though. Like he got jacked a couple times. But and so you're saying Kobe's all those numbers are just you know
I'm saying because
attributed
he,
to attrition. Like you
well,
just
no,
been there.
I think he's played longer in Magic. If you went by percentage of like how many seasons he played and how many times he succeeded, Magic's percentage is higher of those times.
Yeah. No,
I'll give
you.
It to you this way. Let me ask you this. If you were starting a franchise, because I think this is the best way to determine it,
yeah.
who would you pick to
Kobe.
Start your franchise? Every time?
Every time.
Even though you could surround Magic and he'd make everybody better, lift him up?
Nah.
No, you'd want the assassin.
I know when push comes to shove. Like, I don't know what I'm surrounding Magic with, right? Like, those
yeah.
are all unknown entities. I know I can give that man the ball and he'll go give me 60, like, multiple times. I'm going to go with that.
Does yeah.
Kareem factor in at all?
He's the greatest scorer of all time, right? He's got five titles as well.
But his best years were probably with the Bucks.
Yeah, and yeah. Right. He wasn't a lifetime Laker for me, like a lifelong.
Still 14 seasons, more than Magic.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't know he played in Lakerland for that long.
Why'd you look like you had a story or something on the Shaq Kobe beef. I'm a little perceptive on that. I saw a little body language.
No.
You
can
share or not share.
Look,
or what?
Shaq, I don't know any real history between.
All right, I'll tell you a little.
All right, Shaq said to me once, like we were on the bus, and he was talking about when Kobe was a really young player, and he came in. The Lakers were a bunch of like veterans. You know, it was a veteran-laden team. He didn't play a lot his rookie year. Like he had to come in and cut his teeth and earn his keep. It wasn't like they just dropped him in and he was Kobe. So, you know, Kobe was trying to become Kobe, and all of these older dudes were still trying to eat. You know, they were still trying to get fed and win. And so Kobe would come in and shoot a few more times than he probably should, take him out of the flow of their offense. So Shaq said that the older players had a universal symbol that they all understood to be like, stop passing him the ball. And so it was like if you would put like two thumbs up, like you put your two thumbs up and your fists, like if you were given just a straight thumbs up, and then you just kind of touch your fist with your thumbs, right?
Yeah.
So like that was the sign. And if I did that to you, you knew that you were the kid.
You were
supposed to cut the young fella out for a little while. I just thought it was hilarious.
That is incredible.
It became a running joke. We had a kid on our team like Goran Giricek, and this is how it kind of came up because Goran came to the Suns late in the year. And Goran would come in, and he just wanted buckets. And he was a heck of a player, too. But he wanted buckets, and it would kind of take us out of the flow of offense sometimes. So Shaq was like, yo. And he'd
give
me
signal.
That signal. And I'd be like, dude, what the hell is that? And he finally told me the story of how that came to be. And it was Kobe.
See, now, I always thought, like, they're setting up plays. You guys are sitting out of bounds. Like, maybe setting an offense, coming down the floor. And all it means is don't pass it to Kobe.
Yeah.
Don't pass it to Goran.
Yeah, Gita is what we called him. Don't give it to Gita. Gita, no.
I love that. The subtleties. So Kobe, Shaq had their famous beef. There also was a famous beef between Magic Johnson and Isaiah Thomas. But They buried it. They buried the hatchet in a very emotional NBA TV interview.
Who sit up at 19, 20, 21 dreaming of stuff we wanted to do, and now here we are doing it, you know? But you are my brother. Let me apologize to you if I hurt you, that we haven't been together. And God is good to bring us back together. All right? I know, man. It hurt me too. Come here, man.
All right. We didn't even play the
full
length.
I wasn't ready for that.
Well, it was emotional. Isaiah needed like 2 minutes to recoup, like to recover, because he couldn't speak. He was sobbing.
I'm a little verklempt.
On Magic's. Yeah. We need some tissues in here for the episode 14 pod.
What? And in all seriousness, not all jokes aside, like those, I mean, that was some real emotion. What? Does anyone know what?
So here, I asked
happened?
Debo, I asked him in our pre-production meeting. I said the same exact thing because I knew there was a rift.
Right.
I didn't know exactly if there was a moment in time, if it was something over a period of years. What is the gist of it, Debo?
So this is all rumored, yep, all allegedly, but when Magic Johnson contracted HIV and made that announcement in 1991, it was rumored that Isaiah Thomas started spreading rumors that Magic was either bisexual or gay, and this got back to Magic. And then Magic had a lot of influence on the Dream Team in 1992, a year later.
Isaiah got snubbed on that.
Famously, yeah, off the team. Isaiah definitely held a grudge for not being on the most famous basketball team of all time. Definitely deserved it. John Stockton, a great player, but he would have been the backup,
yeah,
point guard over Magic on that roster. But apparently it all stems from that.
But they've never publicly lashed out at one another. This has been a very, like, they're just cold, like ice cold. I don't know. I don't know this or not.
I don't
25
so
year grudge, well, and they're out there crying.
If you remember, they used to be. I mean,
oh, the kiss.
Yeah,
I mean, everybody. I remember that. I'm like, what's going
what
on
is
right
that
now? Yeah.
Have you ever kissed another grown man?
No.
No. I mean, I kiss my dad on the cheek.
Right.
Yeah.
I don't
like,
even kiss my dad. He's not super affectionate.
Yeah.
So I give him the half hug.
So they were really close. Needless yeah to say. Look, both of those guys, I've got history with both of them to a certain degree, and they've both been great to me. So they're both classy dudes. Great ambassadors of the game. You know, I'm glad to see them bury the hatchet. Like, it looked like, you know, that stuff, even if it was 30 years old, is still like right at the surface.
Yeah.
You know, especially for Isaiah, it looked like.
Right.
So, like, I'm happy to see them do that because you know, all too often, and this is all jokes aside, like, we hold on to stuff that's just silly.
Yeah.
Like, in families and in friendships and, you know, life's too short for that.
I totally agree. I don't know if I'm more shocked at the emotion that came out from this or the fact that I didn't realize they were that close. Like, were they besties when they were competing against
each
other?
No, I think they were really tight. Like, I think
I guess
were,
so. Yeah, yeah, obviously. Yeah. Obviously, they had a relationship that lasted a long time, even though they were competing against each other as some of the best matchups we've ever seen. And Isaiah had a great line at the end. Like, he's hugging Ken Harley. He's like, I'm still mad at you because you beat me. Like, yeah. like he was still joking off for that. But, yeah, it's a good thing to see. In 2009, Magic was talking about the reconciliation, and he said, if that day doesn't come, then it doesn't come. So that was in 2009. He sounded like he wasn't having any of it.
Wow.
But good to see in 2017.
Yeah, buried
they finally
hatchet,
buried
man
the hatchet.
Put that beef to rest.
In other Isaiah Thomas news, except this is the one for the Cleveland Cavaliers.
IT4?
The Celtics. Yeah, IT4.
Okay.
He's been making some waves.
Uh-oh.
We've seen him out there in pregame a lot. He's been shooting, been running the court. Yahoo has reported that he's targeting the first week of January for a return. He expected to go 5-on-5 practices soon, then go through a stint in the G League. What do you think that I was surprised when I saw that. Like, does he really have to go to the G League?
Dude, first of all, the G League, kudos to the G League and the NBA for making it okay to go to the G League. Because when I played and the D League first came around, like, there was no chance nobody was going to the G League. Like, right, you rehab, be damned. Like, I'll do my rehab in practice. I'm not going down to do a stint in the G League.
Is it necessary?
It's not necessary. Well, it is, because what happens is, like, teams like the Cavs at this point, how many games are they in? 25? Are they 30 games in right now?
Yeah.
30. They're not going to be doing a whole lot of practicing. They're just not. And so what you would have to do to get Isaiah Thomas, like, real meaningful practice time and you know, blowing out his lungs is put together some sort of young kid game on the side, like all of your young rookies or second and third year players, and the Cavs don't have a lot of them. They're gray beards across the roster for the most part. So you can't even like drum up a good game for him to play in practice at this point. So yeah, in order for him to get some timing and play extended minutes and actually, you know, get those lungs blown out, send him to the G League. And it's not for his skill. It's basically for the conditioning and the timing of it.
I think it's great. What they've done with the G League, it's made it like this is another reason why I think the NBA is going to explode past the NFL. It's only a matter of time because they have a developmental league now that they've got, where in baseball we've had this forever. Like pitchers, they'd go down and play in AAA. Like, no big deal. You're going to go do a little stint down there, get ready to go. Now they've got this where also – it's becoming an attractive option in the summertime to watch the G League. I mean, I remember watching this season, watching Lonzo Ball. You're going to get a first look at some of your rookies, to get them, see them play. So I think this is just another part in the evolution of the NBA, which is going to really impress. What impact do you think it has when he returns? Is it going to be a slam dunk? Hey, the Cavs are a better team because they have been. LeBron's been putting up MVP numbers. They found this chemistry. They're winning. They're starting to challenge the Celtics, where they look much closer than they did just a month ago.
It's going to be huge for them. It's going
to better?
Be huge. Yeah.
You don't think there'll be a tough transition at all?
I think there could be. There's a percentage chance that it doesn't go off smoothly from an offensive perspective, but I think that gets ironed out relatively quick. Right now, they're a team that's built around LeBron making plays. And although he's having his maybe best year of his career and the most efficient, you don't want a guy in LeBron's age range having to carry that much of the load offensively night to night. I mean, if he's not scoring it, he's assisting on it. If he's not assisting on it, he's the one making the initial burst down the lane that gets the ball to Danny that allows him to swing it to Debo for the three. So it's the hockey assist. I mean, he's like Russell Wilson accounts for a said percentage of Seattle's touchdowns. Like I would want to know the numbers on LeBron, like two passes away from a score, assist and score, what percentage he accounts for. He needs another playmaker out there. And Isaiah Thomas is that. It will allow him to get off the ball a little bit. It will allow that second unit and I imagine they play Isaiah Thomas bridging the gap between LeBron leaving the game and the second unit to have some more firepower and ability to make plays off the bounce, getting other people involved. So I think it's going to be great for them.
LeBron James, fifth in the league in secondary assists.
Fifth in the league in secondary assists. What is he in primary? Is it like in
Second.
Yeah. And what is he in scoring?
Man, Raja.
Sorry.
He's putting you to the task.
No, but real talk. I mean, it's painting a picture of how much he actually has to do for them.
I think it's probably
third in scoring.
Right.
I mean, you don't need all those stats to just watch a game. Throw it on and watch how many times he touches the ball, scores the ball, or like you said, is a facilitator to get the ball in the bucket.
And what'll happen is like that. The NBA probably, like unlike any other sport, is two different games, regular season and playoffs. Mm-hmm. And so while this exists in the regular season, LeBron being able to do all this and people, you know, kind of not letting it happen because he's that good, but they're going to really game plan and try to take away what the Cavs like to do offensively in the playoffs. And if it's only LeBron, it's that much easier to really lock in and figure out what you're going to do defensively, schematically to stop that. Mm-hmm. When you've got other players like Isaiah Thomas and guys like that who can just get it, you know, you don't have to call a play for IT. He could just go get it.
Yeah.
Like, it's hard to game plan for that. And so it makes him that much more dangerous in the playoffs.
So Isaiah Thomas looks like he's going to be back sooner than everybody thought. Maybe he's taking tips from Tom Brady's trainer. Because TB12, we talked about this a little bit. He's got the app. The off-the-field nutrition health aspect of Tom Brady, I think he wants to be his legacy.
Right.
I think that's a big part of it. He wants to go down as the greatest ever, but I also think he wants his legacy to be one of the longest careers to succeed in an age which nobody's seen done before. And he has credited his trainer, Alex Guerrero, as being that guy. Like, he has put that much emphasis on him. So he's had this trainer basically travel with him to games, be a huge part of what he does, stretching, all these aspects that make him the greatest in the NBA. He's a business partner of him in the TB12 Center, which again goes back to the cookbook. It goes back to the app. All of this goes back to this guy that's extremely close to him. Guess who doesn't like Alex Guerrero?
Let me guess.
One, Bill Belichick.
Does he like anybody?
No, he doesn't. Anything outside the locker room. But so a few weeks ago, it just was reported, he actually banned him from the team playing, from the sideline, where he does not want him around the office, so to speak. I think this could be a bigger deal than we think.
Yeah.
Because obviously, Tom Brady is the face of that franchise, right? It's Belichick and Brady. Those two are the greatest. If you take away something that matters to him, what is that? Like, where does that? There's going to be some blowback.
Yeah, that's a really weird space. Because I, like Steve Nash, when I played with Steve, He'd have his trainer. Now, he wasn't around every day, but he would come down from Canada, and Rick, I believe his name was, and a really good dude, by the way. We had some great times, families and stuff like that. But he would come down and tune Steve up. You know, Steve had a bad back, so he'd work on him with his core and, you know, make sure his muscles were firing. And that was all accepted by, you know, and a kudos to, like, Aaron Nelson and Mike Elliott and guys like that who are our training staff at the time, because that was what was in the best interest of Steve. And it helped him physically and mentally. LeBron has a guy, I can't recall his name, but he is independent of the Cavaliers, you know, strength and conditioning staff. He consults with them, but he's hands-on with LeBron all the time. He administers all of LeBron's work to LeBron and does his rehab and so on and so forth. So it's not uncommon. Usually there is a understanding within the organization that's what said player needs, especially if he's the face of your franchise, and you just let it go, like, for lack of a better way. Like, what are you going to do? When you have a guy like Bill Belichick kicking someone out, there's something going on there. There's something.
Supposedly Guerrero was talking to other players, which you would assume, like, hey, if he's around the players all the time, he's going to develop some relationships.
Right.
And I'm sure a lot of those players, if I was backing up Tom Brady and I was a young guy, if I was Garoppolo before he left, I'd be like, man, how's this guy doing it at 40? Let me talk to his guy.
Yeah.
He was developing some relationships, and apparently he was going in and saying that some of the injuries were because of the training regimen that the Patriots were using, that the treatment they were receiving from the trainers and the medical staff, and he was basically disagreeing with what the Patriots staff was saying. Exactly, it's a bad look.
Yeah.
What if he's right?
Yeah,
and he might be, but I see where Belichick's like, hey, you're undermining my guys. I just wonder how bad it is if Belichick won, because I would assume Belichick first goes to Brady, calls him into his office and says, hey, your guy's killing me. He's going into all, I know it's your guy, but you can't have him coming in and undermining our staff. Have him tone it back.
Yeah.
And that it didn't stop. Like, that's my assumption.
Then he's got to go. And in the short term, you know, it might be the wrong move, because your point might be right. Maybe the guy is right, but you can't have that running around your organization. Not one that's as buttoned up as the Patriots are. So that's a long term like question, is whether or not you dig into that in the off season. But the immediate fire is like losing control and losing the culture that you have there. So you got to get rid of that.
Yeah.
The question is, I guess the big question is, like, how's Tom in all of this? Like, is Tom now off the reservation? Because I know LeBron. Like, Steve wouldn't have acted like that. If Nash's guy was in there disrespecting what the training staff and them were doing, he would have been like, look, dude, you can't. I'm sorry, bro. You put me in a bad spot. But LeBron is so tight with his guy. Like, if you banned him, it's part of the reason, you know, it was rumored that he left Miami, was that his people didn't have the access.
And Riley hated
to
it,
the
right?
planes, to the locker room that LeBron wanted. And so, like, if Brady's off the reservation with that, that could be something.
I think it all depends. I think Brady's reaction to this, we'll probably never know, because they're so close. Like, in Belichick will just watch a press conference. He never says anything. But this goes back. So Mike Shanahan was the head coach of the Broncos.
Yeah.
And at the pregame or at the preseason big meeting, you have this big meeting. Every player in there's been this big conference room, and he's going over, like, your goals for the season, kind of your team philosophy, because you got some rookies, some free agents who are in there. He came up there and he, like, was going through it, and it was like one of the segments of the meeting. He's like, all right, he's like, I don't want this stuff in our locker room. He's like, I don't want any religion talked about in our locker room. I don't want any stock tips. And he's like, I don't want you guys talking about women. And he basically was saying, like, sharing women, over women. And I was like, all right. Like, as somebody who's a Christian, I was like, all right, am I allowed to talk about my faith? And it was never about that. But, like, every locker room has different faiths. You got Christians, you got Jewish, Muslim, you got everybody. I think it depends on, like, because Brady has this is where I'm going with this. Brady, it's kind of like a religion to him. Like, he lives, eats, breathes. It is what matters to him.
Right.
Is he in there preaching his religion to the locker room and saying, hey, you've got to do my system? And is his Guerrero, his trainer, is he doing the same thing? Because once you're imposing your, quote, religion on everybody else, then it becomes a little bit overwhelming. It becomes offensive. And then there's peer pressure on, hey, I better buy into Brady's system and his guy, or else you're kind of on the outside looking in. So I think it's just one of those topics that you don't want to get too overwhelmed by, or it can create a rift in a sport where you need rapport. You need everybody on the same page.
Right.
You don't want little rifts, little factions within the locker room.
That's interesting. So you're saying it could be a cultish type of environment there.
He clearly makes it a cult. Like, I mean, yeah. The guy doesn't eat bread, pasta, like nothing. Like, he is taking it. Strawberries. He's taking it to the next level.
What's wrong with strawberries, bro?
I don't know. Something
about says he hasn't had one in his life.
Well, he doesn't like them, right? So that's different. I don't think that's the nutrition thing. Because strawberries are good for you, right?
Great.
How do you know if you never try it?
You sound like you bought into the cult. He's drinking that juice, man.
Yeah, that's it.
Debo's about to go down. So big news in the NFL. I don't typically get too fired up from the Pro Bowl roster.
Right.
And we're actually doing a segment here for our CBS stuff where we're going to do Pro Bowl snubs. It's my least favorite topic of the year in all of sports. Haven't done radio, haven't done podcasts.
Is the Pro Bowl that scrimmage they do after the season?
Yes, it's really dumb. Yeah. The game is a joke, but I hate them worse, this topic.
Yeah.
So I went out to our producers that I'm doing the show with, and I said, what are we doing? Now, give me some ideas. And I got a little bit fired up, but I think I'm probably going to be wrong on it. So Pro Bowl snubs. They said the first one out of their mouth. I was like, what? Wait a second. How did he not get in? Case Keenum. Incredible year for the Vikings. Has them on the cusp of possibly the one seed, them or the Eagles. They're still fighting for that number one seed in the NFC. Was left out of the Pro Bowl, off the NFC roster. That had me fired up. I'm like, why? Is it perception? He's a backup? Because it is a popularity contest.
Right.
So I was fired up about it until...
Goff, Wentz, and...
Drew Brees. So I went and looked at it. I'm like, man, well, how do you get too fired up about that?
Now, does he get the injury nod, though? Because Wentz is out?
Yeah, he will. Right. He will. Because he'll definitely get to play, which is all you really want. You want the free trip. You want the swag. You want all that.
Yeah.
Although in the NFL, guys don't even want to play because you don't want to get hurt.
Right.
But I hate the conversation. I don't like it. But what would you use to determine selecting a Pro Bowl player or an NBA All-Star? Like, what would you look for? Do you go strictly stat line? Like, oh, he's the top, you know, touchdown thrower, he's in?
Yeah, I think there's a... I think at the higher end, like, of each category, you would have to go with the guy with the most.
I meant Wentz. Carson Wentz.
It's all right.
Russell Wilson.
Russell Wilson. That's where I left off. So, yeah.
Wait, who's in now? Sorry?
So, it is Russell Wilson, Carson Wentz, and Drew Brees. So, he'll get in. Carson Wentz is out.
All right. So, right? Goff didn't get in.
But I wonder who's higher on the...
So, Goff and Keenum could both be snubs.
Right.
Oh, wow.
Right.
Who goes then? Who goes?
That's the next vote. So
honestly,
he could get snubbed twice.
And you know what? I bet Russell Wilson doesn't go. Yeah. I bet when it's all said and done, he's been banged up. He probably won't go.
Half the roster doesn't decide to go.
Right. Because none of them want to go.
Matter.
That's so fantastic.
So back to the question, though.
No, I think at the upper end of each category, like you're leading, like, passer, yes, receiver, yes. Like, you know, once you start getting into, the, like, the next tier of guys, then I think you can do, like, intangible stuff, like what they mean to their team. And it's hard for me with football because, like, I'm only looking at the guys that are doing the top end stuff.
Right.
Like with basketball, I'd make a case for a guy, like even if he score 25 points a game, but he was out there, he might not block a lot of shots, but he's just a great team defender. Like my eyeballs can tell me that on a basketball court. It's hard for me in football because I'm only really looking at like the guys making the tackles, the guys throwing it, catching it, and running it. Like other than that, I'm not watching the guys in the trenches blocking, the receivers blocking downfield. Like I don't pay attention to that stuff.
Yeah, I remember the Pro Bowl voting process being a complete joke as far as the players end.
Right.
Because they'd pass out little pieces of paper and be like, hey, Pro Bowl time, you know, get your votes. And you'd literally have guys running around like campaigning for either their
boys.
Yeah, for like, hey, that guy played with him in college.
That's so corny.
You've got to get him in. Like, he's got a huge bonus. Guys are campaigning for each other. It becomes a total popularity contest. It is not guys studying film saying, hey, what's best for the game, which I don't expect it to be that. But it is a total sham.
So this is all voted on, the NFL's all peers?
There's a combination of it, but it's a significant portion of it. The players' part is.
Well, the NBA's got more interesting because it used to be like starters were always fan. Like starters are fan votes, so that's straight popularity. That's why you could get people like who was it a few years ago got voted in and they barely
– Zaza was close last year.
Right, like, the push, like the fan push.
And then it was the coaches for the I believe it was the coaches – was it the coaches and the like, Associated Press or something for the reserves? But now, like, it's like captain and you get to pick. What's the format in the NBA now?
Like, well, I think for the starters, it's now a third is the fans, a third is players, a third is coaches for the starters.
Yeah.
And then I think the coaches pick the reserves. Or check on that.
Wasn't there a captaincy, like, and then you got to pick your team?
That's going to change this year.
That's
going
to change.
Once those players are selected, then they're going to be assigned teams.
And they're copying the NFL off that. Because the NFL did that with the Pro Bowl rosters. They had the captains. They had, like, the Hall of Famer guys, like Michael Irvin and Deion, selected the teams.
Did I hear something in the NBA where it's not going to be, conference?
And Durant are captains, and they're going to pick their teams.
So you could have LeBron. LeBron could be playing against his teammates, correct?
Yes.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, I like that too.
I do too. I think all of them you need to spice up the All-Star games because none of them they play defense. But make it a little bit interesting.
Put some bread on that thing. There's already bread on it, but put enough. Put a million. Put a million ahead on like the winning team in the NBA, and you'll see some cats out there giving you some basketball.
Same thing with the Pro Bowl. Yes. Like $50,000 isn't going to get it done for you when you're making $10 or $15 million. You need to have throw a million on it.
Correct.
Get it on there.
Put a million.
So shout out to the Pro Bowl rosters. We also have a new segment that Debo wanted to introduce to us today, the shout out segment. We had some pretty historic moments yesterday. Congrats to our women's basketball greats, Gina Auriemma of UConn and Sylvia Hatchell of UNC. Collect career 1,000th wins on Tuesday. Same day, both of them did
same
it.
Day.
That's pretty crazy.
Yeah.
Like the fact that they both had their greatest coaches. Everybody knows Gino. I don't think anyone knows any other coach outside of Pat Summitt or Gina Auriemma.
Right.
Unless you're a diehard women's college basketball fan.
Sylvia Hatchell, cancer survivor, too.
Really?
Yeah, yeah.
Awesome.
Pretty dope.
Pretty
congratulations.
Cool. Quick question for you. How do you stack up Gino or Pat Summitt or Sylvia Hatchell when you're talking about greatest coaches of all time? Like when you say Phil Jackson, greatest coach of all time, Nick Saban, Bill Belichick, do you stack him up with that group or should they have a separate group?
I typically stack up like pros versus college anyway. Like I separate the two. So in the college
pantheon.
All right,
pantheon, so you're saying Coach K, Gino,
same
group
right, yes,
right there?
Absolutely, absolutely.
Do you think Gino could cross over to the men's game and succeed?
It's a good question. I think he could have some success. I don't know that he'd be top tier. I think there's some fundamental like differences between the men's and women's games, just athletically what guys can do and what you can get away with maybe.
And the women's game is much more fundamental. Like it's fundamentally sound. Like they're playing better, quote, better basketball when you look at plays being run as opposed to just sheer throw out the ball and let the guys go do it.
Yeah, true. But I think he'd have success, but I don't know that –
I have no problem, and this is not very PC for today's world. I have no problem saying – Gino Auriemma is the best women's basketball coach of all time. Coach K is the greatest men's basketball coach. Coach Wooden, maybe, might have an argument there. But I have no problem separating the two. It's a polarizing topic nowadays. Yeah, I think he might be able to succeed, but why do we have to compare him to Coach K? They do different products.
They're different games. They're not played the same. They're just not.
Another historic moment in the Big 12 college basketball. Oklahoma freshman Trae Young tied the NCAA record with 22 assists. He also had 26 points. He's averaging 28.5 a game and 10 assists per game. 22 assists in one game. That's getting it done.
That would take me like 8 games to get 22 assists. Hey, no, the young fella is the truth. He's the real deal. He's the truth. Stayed home, is from Norman, Oklahoma, and is absolutely going like bananas. Good for you.
Yeah,
he's dope.
Insane stats right there. Yeah. All right, that's our shout-out segment. Let's get to topics. This is my favorite one.
No, I'm going
to
get a shout-out.
Oh, you got one?
I got two shout-outs.
Okay, what you got?
Western High School, 8-1, Davie, Florida.
Nice.
I think they had like 5 wins last year. We started helping the program this year.
Nice.
And Team Mamba, our travel team. Yeah, I am. And then Team Mamba, our travel team, got an invite to the John Lucas in Houston, Texas. So that's pretty exciting.
Very cool. Big moment.
Shout
all right. Shout-out. I got one. I finished second in the father-daughter tournament in the golf tournament up at PGA National with my girl Cameron.
There we go.
Shout out.
No doubt.
All right. Family shout-outs. I like it. We'll do that as a weekly segment. All right. What do we got for topics, Debo?
You know what's overrated? Sportsmanship.
Taking a page out of Rajah's rules.
That's a direct quote from Rajah Bell on episode 13. Well, that sportsmanship thing creeping up again. Last night, Missouri basketball survived a scare to beat Stephen F. Austin 82-81. Post-game, Tigers coach Quanzo Martin decided he wanted to address and praise the Lumberjacks for their effort.
You're a talented team. And one thing I always tell our players, guys, it doesn't matter from the jersey. Y'all got just as much talent as we got, man. That's why I ain't telling you to make you feel good. We go home. I'm telling you real talk, man. I've never done this in my career. Guys, I'm telling you, y'all got a hell of a team. You got a hell of a coach. Y'all defend your ass off. Best defense we played all year, man.
So that's Quanto Martin, head coach of Mizzou, talking to Stephen F. Austin's team after he just beat them.
Yeah.
Your thoughts?
What was the score?
By one.
Close game.
A one-point loss.
And they probably were favored by a 15, yeah. At least.
Yeah, I'm okay with it.
You
I'm
are. Okay.
I initially was like, man, get the hell up out of my locker room. Like, I don't want to hear anything right now. But, you know, I'm trying to think, like, when we went to Arizona and we played them in a tight-ass game in their tournament, we weren't supposed to be on the court with them. If Lute Olson had come in and been like, hey, man, you guys tell, we ain't know a lot about you, but you were tough. Like, I might have been all right with that. I could have been cool with that.
I'm okay with it if Mizzou had lost.
Right.
Like, and then you go congratulate the team. He's going in there, and there's video of it. He's talking to the team, and Stephen F. Austin's coach is standing right next to him, and he's addressing the team almost like it's theirs. Like, he's talking to them, coaching them up, saying, hey, good job. I think it's a really dicey situation. I think it played out here. Everybody loves it. It's kind of like the Tamba Ali and Bosa thing. Everybody loves
this.
But
you hate it.
I didn't love it. All right? This one, everybody loves. Like, oh, what a great moment. Coach Bowden used to do it at times to other teams.
Right.
Go over there and say, hey, great game. But I think he wouldn't do it in this fashion. It was like a formal team. I guess one thing, like, what's the post-game handshake for? That's when you go around and tell each player, hey, man, you did great.
Right.
You did a great job. You guys really showed a lot of heart. Why do you have to go address the team in a formal setting?
Well, don't you imagine that the coach had to be all right with that, though?
He had to have been. But at what point is there going to be a moment when a coach is like, yeah, I'm going to go talk to your team, and the coach is going to be like, no, get up out of my locker room. And then it's not going to fly.
Yeah, I mean, if he didn't like that, he should have told him.
I'm sure he was fine with it. I think they even applauded when he left. But I'm like, you just lost.
Yeah, I was all right with it, though. I mean,
ultimately, I'm all right with it, too.
If you had beat the brakes off of him, like, yes, that would have been really corny.
But right, when's that going to happen? All right, next up.
All right, so Quanza Martin giving out some advice. Kristaps Porzingis giving out gifts in a move that proves he's in New York and not Latvia anymore. The star gave Tim's to his Knicks teammates right before the holiday season. Danny, as a QB, do you ever give out any gifts?
I did. What are Tim's? Are
those dead ass. Oh. Timberlands.
Oh, Tim's.
Yeah. dead ass.
God, there's a lot of white boy references in here. A lot of them. No, here's what I was. When you said you threw me off because you said Latvia, I thought because there's a cookie that's from Australia. It's like a Tim's or Tom's or something like that. And I thought this might have been a food that was served. But now, I know.
Are you buying that? Are you buying that?
I thought it was something to his culture he was bringing over. I think he probably could have spent a lot more money to get him something nicer. But he probably has a deal with Timberland, with the company.
Yeah.
I gave my offensive line, when I had 1 year we went to the playoffs, we had a good year. And I was actually the starter to finish the season. We lost in the playoffs. But that Christmas, I was making league minimum. It was about 230, 240, something like that. I bought my offensive lineman wallets.
Okay.
Like coach wallets.
Coach, yes.
They were probably a couple hundred bucks
a piece. Coach was all right back then.
That's the whole offensive line, not just the starters?
I got them all. I hope so. I don't remember. I think I got them. The way they played the next year, maybe it was only the starters. But that was what I got. Did you guys ever – now, I did – within the quarterback rooms that I played on, we did a quarterback exchange.
Right.
They were always kind of goofing on each other. Like you'd get some corny, like to kind of mess with the dude.
Yeah.
We never got like serious gifts.
Yeah, I didn't.
But my man, like Jake Plummer, like he used to get the offensive. He was making good, significant money.
Sure.
He'd get them really good gifts. Like I think 1 year he bought them ATVs. Like you're talking
dope.
About, $7,000-$8,000 a piece for each player. And that was the offensive lineman loved him for it.
I would have loved him too.
Me too. I was like, what about the backups?
A little something over here. I'm trying to think if anybody ever gave, or I definitely did not give out gifts to the whole team. I don't know that I ever got any, but anyway, Tim, that's kind of, I mean, look,
yeah, it's
you're
good
in
one.
New York.
Yeah.
I see,
like
he wears
it.
Tim's
Talk
a lot.
Him.
I see him in interviews,
he
like he likes his Tim's.
Adopted the culture.
Yeah. I like the New York swag. If he starts dropping dead ass like in interviews, then you know we're the culture's seeping in.
Yeah.
All right, Porzingis, a third-year pro in line for a max contract. He can definitely afford those Tim's. Browns rookie defensive lineman might have a harder time stomaching this $37,000 dinner bill posted by Emmanuel Ogba. Now, Miles Garrett has the money. He was the number one overall pick. But Caleb Brantley and Larry Ogunjobi, probably not so much. It's a hallowed tradition in sports, making these rookies pay for stuff. But is $37,000 too much?
Who was there? The entire defense? Or was it just the position group? Yeah, it must have been. That's a big bill.
I don't know how you get to 37.
Now, the thing has been, and this is what bothers me, it's almost been like, hey, let's screw them over.
Yeah.
Like, I get it. Like, the rookies should buy. And this is where Myles Garrett needs to step up and just be like, I got you. Like, I'll get it. I'm the first-round pick.
Over
I'm the top
over. $5 million bonus.
Yeah, that's Garrett. The one where he steps up and says, I got it. If he splits the bill, then screw you. Like, that's a messed-up move. Every team I've been on has a rookie dinner where you'll take you out to eat. A lot of times, you'll even help on the bill, but you'll go easy on them. But now I almost feel like it's a thing where you want to kind of beat the last team that did it, because we've seen these bills posted on social media. Like, social media is the downfall of a lot of this stuff. And this one clearly is over, because they start ordering, like, the Remy, like, the old, like, whatever, oldest, most expensive. They'll get the, what's the tequila? The Don Julio?
Oh, yeah.
The 1912 or whatever. 1812, whatever it is. They'll buy those. And they'll just order, like, 10 of them, and they'll get them to go. Like, that's messed up, right?
Look, I'm fighting you. If you leave me with the $37,000 bill, I don't care if I just signed for $5 million.
Even if you got the $5 million, you ain't going down?
Why do I have... Maybe it's because I was raised in a different environment, because I think the NFL has it wrong. I think that the NBA does it right. Wait, you take care of your rooks. Like, you take them out. When I was a rookie, you know, Dikembe Mutombo and you know, Allen Iverson, Aaron McKee, Eric Snow, those guys looked out for us. Like, they took us shopping. They bought us meals and stuff, and then we pass that down. Like, as we get older and we make our money,
you didn't have any rookie
then we
hazing?
Do it. No, our hazing was silly. Like, our hazing, like, we had to carry bags. Like, I had to wait for the team bus to show up with all the bags, and I had to divvy out and take bags to rooms. I had to make sure everyone had their practice bags in the morning. I had to, you know, if Danny Cannell loved to have a paper and coffee, like Terry Porter was my vet when I was with San Antonio, I'd have a USA Today every morning and a hot cup of coffee, donuts, the random, like if they want to be, you know, a-holes about it, they kick a bunch of balls like up into the second row during your shoot around and you got to go get them. But nothing that's putting you in like financial like binds like that. That's their job. They've made the money. Let me make my bread, and then I'll spend some money on the rooks. But
you never racked up a $37,000 bill.
Bro, I am fighting you.
TGI Fridays?
What? Nothing? TGI Fridays? Oh, on City Ave right there?
Yeah.
Nah, but I got robbed at the green, something green right behind it, their apartments. But they got me. I was in San Francisco, and it was an inside job. They knew I was out of town, and they robbed me blind.
Speaking of robbed, did you see Charlie Villanueva?
No,
got robbed. His house got robbed in Dallas.
Did it really?
They stole his appliances while he was gone. That tells you
like major appliances?
His toilet. They took out the toilet out of the ground.
Was it gold plated?
I don't know. That's what he was tweeting pictures of it last night online. And he was saying he called the cops. They didn't come in 4 hours. He called them four times. They still hadn't been to his house. And he's tweeting pictures of his bathroom. There's a hole in the ground. He's like, this is so messed up. They stole my toilet.
We don't know if it was gold plated.
What part of
Dallas? Right. We don't know because he didn't show the picture of it.
Part of Dallas is
exactly.
Charlie.
Right?
Hey, Charlie, another good dude, man. Like, I talked about Ryan Shazier.
Yeah.
You know, because my son, my little one's got alopecia, and Charlie's a good dude. I talked to him. You know, I didn't really get to know him when we played, but I spent some time when I was in Cleveland chatting him up on the sideline, talking about his experience so I could kind of know what to deal with. My boy, really good dude, man. Charlie, you got to protect your stuff, bro.
Yeah, maybe you should get him a toilet. Yeah. Buy him a new toilet.
Get you some cameras, Charlie. Come on, baby.
Messed up. All right, that's a wrap for Off the Bench, episode 14. I like our man Debo's going with names, the athletes, greatest numbers of all time.
Jacob Gomez.
Ooh, that's a good – who?
Plays on my youth team.
I was going to roll with it and be like, yeah, I'm supposed to know that name, but I won't. So we'll see who he comes out with.
Yeah, who you 14. Got? 14, who you got?
I don't know. Brad Johnson?
LBJ.
Oh,
right.
Super Bowl winning quarterback. Make sure you hit us up on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, SoundCloud, anywhere you can find podcasts. We're on there. If you go to Apple, go to the iTunes page, leave us a 5-star review. We need your questions. 5-star Q&A. We're calling it. We're going to answer those on Friday. Give us your feedback at Cannell and Bell. We got to get to 10,000 so we can do our rap battle in here freestyle, even though Raja's prepping beats and writing out rhymes. We're going to do that if we get to 10,000 followers. So thanks for the support. Keep listening.